Peter Sculthorpe is one of the composers who's been involved in a project which has been going on for some time now concerning Gallipoli, and in particular the Dawn Service at Anzac Cove. And it involves not just Australian composers, as we will shortly hear. The person who's in charge of it all is Chris Latham. Chris Latham is also the artistic director of the Canberra International Music Festival, and we found him yesterday in one of the lounges at Sydney Airport, just about to get on a flight for Istanbul. And I began by asking him what exactly it was that he was doing.
I've been engaged in an act of cultural diplomacy since 2005. I did the original Prelude concerts in the 2005 90th celebration of the Battle of Gallipoli. And at that stage, there was a sense that something needed to be done to prepare for the 100th. And we proposed that we made a symphony in 10 parts. So the idea was that each of the countries of Turkey, New Zealand and Australia would have their experience reflected back through music. And obviously the beauty about music is it's non-linguistic, so it transcends language. And the interesting challenge has actually been to, when you come to terms with the experience from all three sides.
From a musical point of view?
Yeah, the most interesting thing for me is that I've spent almost 10 years now studying Turkish music, which I didn't expect to do. And it's a very rich art form, and there are fantastic musicians in that art form, and that's been a great education for me.
So the final 10-movement symphony will include movements by Australian, New Zealand and Turkish composers?
And they'll be played by Australian, New Zealand and Turkish performers.
Right.
The idea is to raise a Gallipoli orchestra from musicians in Turkey, Australia and New Zealand. And I've spent much of the last 10 years actually building those contacts, so I actually know the best musicians in each three countries. So the idea would be actually to put into practice this idea that musicians can transcend the barriers of language and culture. The other thing is that there's specific technical issues that we have to address. The whole problem about makam. So there's a different tuning system in Turkish music, and understanding technically how to get musicians who play in different modes to play together harmoniously, that took at least a few years to understand how to handle.
Yes, I can imagine. So the different movements, the different nationalities' movements, will intersect with each other, I assume.
Well, essentially they run usually in alternation. So we started with a Turkish composer, and that was Demir Demirkan. Then we went to New Zealand and we did a Maori-inspired piece. Gareth Farr wrote the music, and Richard Nunza, who's a very important cultural expert on Maori instruments, provided the solo parts. Peter Sculthorpe did the third piece, which was featuring the mouth organ. So there's always been usually a solo instrument that was somewhat iconic. And in the first piece, the Turkish solo instrument was the ney. Now, all of these instruments play in slightly different tunings. The Maori instruments are entirely non-diatonic, they're all microtonal. It was just very interesting to kind of understand how to put all these together.
Yes. And so the fact that these instruments are there, particularly the mouth organ, suggests that the music of the trenches is a sort of theme for some of this.
Well, one of the curious things that I'm finding, the more research I do, is how much music there actually was in the trenches. I mean, the famous one that I've been working on for a while is Frederick Septimus Kelly, the Australian composer who wrote two major works in the trenches at Cape Hellas. But in actual fact, I think all soldiers participated in music each night. We've got first-person accounts that talk about that the Indian musicians would have their concert and the Turkish musicians would have their concert and the Anzac troops would gather around and sing. And we now can corroborate that there was this West Australian trumpet player who used to play at Quinn's Post, and he would play while the sun went down. And this is very beautiful. It was an oral interview that was done that I've just recently found a transcription of from the 50s, where someone described the fact that when he finished playing, the Turks actually put their hands above the trenches and would clap and bang their sort of meal tins together. So there was a sense that they heard each other's music and they participated in some way. I've even found an account from the Western Front where there was a German trumpeter they called Old Cornet Joe who used to take requests from the British. And this would go on for quite a long time, a good half hour, and they would sort of ask for the old Bull and Bush, and they'd have their mouth organs, and they would play on their side, and he would play on his side. And there seems to have been this idea that I think that it was a required activity for sanity. There's some way that they used it in order to kind of regain their equilibrium.
Yes, that's extraordinary, isn't it? And it does seem like a completely other world when you consider modern warfare.
Well, modern warfare, of course, was being done by people, and it was a very dehumanising experience, and I think it shows that humanity had to reassert itself.
Yes. Let's talk about what you're doing when you get there.
So I go there, and I have to do a very intense piece by Andrew Schultz, which is called The August Offensive, and this piece depicts all the most dramatic battles. So this is the end of the film, Gallipoli, the Battle at the Neck. There's also the New Zealand great battle on Chanuk there, where they charge up and take the hill, and then it's taken back by Ataturk and his troops in very dramatic circumstances. But essentially, the month of August was this enormous month of carnage where the Anzac troops and the English troops were trying to break through, and they just didn't. And there was this terrible stalemate that came down after that. It's the month in which the war was truly lost. And it's a very strong piece by Andrew Schultz. Has enormously complex cross rhythms, and it was an interesting one to actually come to terms with. I was wondering for a while whether it would be actually possible to play, and it's extremely effective. I'm very, very happy with it. I'm also glad because in a symphony, you need to have a very high point, and this will be the dramatic high point of the symphony.
And so it is for orchestra.
Yeah, we do it with military musicians over there with a lot of strange transcriptions, you know. Tenor horns playing horn parts and saxes playing oboe parts and all that sort of thing. But the actual, when it gets done, it's written for a normal triple wind orchestra with copious brass and percussion. There's also quite a number of Turkish musical instruments that will be involved. So we will have a ney, two zornas, probably a may, quite a lot of Turkish percussion. Anyway, we're still going to determine the entire list, but there'd be at least five or six Turkish musicians in there as well.
Well, it sounds very ambitious. And of course, as soon as it's over, you're hot-footing it back to Australia so that you can run the Canberra International Music Festival. So
this is, I think, the way I get to have a little bit of a holiday. So I get a break, and I'm quite grateful for it, actually. It's very beautiful to be able to go to Istanbul at this time of year.
Well, I hope you have a great trip. I think you should go and find yourself a gin and tonic, Chris. And I recorded that conversation, a very brief conversation with Chris Latham yesterday evening, just as he was about to board a flight to Istanbul. And he will be back for the Canberra International Music Festival because it starts on the 10th of May.